Now, another hour of Smart Talk. 620 KPOJ, Portland's Talk.
New York, to the hills of Los Angeles, a voice is rising to serve justice. This is the Norman Goldman Show, the home of fierce independence, intelligent dialogue, and passionate logic is right here, right now. Sitting in for Norm, here is Adam Klugman, host of Mad as Hell in America Radio. Heard Saturdays on AM 620, Portland's Talk, KPOJ.
Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where fierce independence is the norm. I love that. I love the double entendre of where fierce independence is the norm. It places Norman Goldman as the norm. And he is, it's almost got a triple entendre thing. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for the Norman Goldman. On Thanksgiving Eve, and I am grateful to be here. And I'm wondering if we shouldn't close out this next hour with some calls about what we're grateful for. Because we're talking about shifting our attitudes. You know, it's hard to watch the Republican debates and come away feeling grateful for the national dialogue that we're having. In fact, we feel irritated, angry, pissed off, and generally confused, because there's something behind the veneer of the national dialogue as it's being presented in the corporate media that we're not getting to. So maybe the place we start is by coming back to our own individual lives and finding those things that we are grateful for. If you feel like calling in with something like that as we lead into this Thanksgiving Eve of 2012, give us a call at 1-888-321-6001. That's 1-888-321-6001. Let's go to Bob in Seattle. Bob, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Hi, Adam.
Hi, Bob.
Nice work you're doing.
Pardon?
I gotta say, nice work you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
You brought in some great guests, and I really appreciate you carrying on the spirit.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about control a bit tonight.
What do you mean?
The collapse of our financial system is problem, reaction, solution. It's an old formula, and I know you've heard the phrase before.
Where are we going with this?
Where I'm going is here we go into a cashless society where your food can be denied you at the click of a button. And I see we're a long ways away from that.
Yeah, we are a long ways from that. I would just like to have some cash in our society that people can use to pay their bills. I'd like to see some jobs, right? I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm not very comfortable with conspiracy theories, because it's kind of like trying to convince people of a belief in God. Do you know what I mean? If
right,
I believe in God and you don't believe in God, I can
right.
argue with you all night about it, but I can't offer any proof. So
opposed to a debt system.
Well, now that's something we can talk about. I mean,
yeah.
If you want to talk about a debt system, you know, what I would say was wages went up, and I do appreciate the call, Bob. You know, someone said to me once that that credit was what we got in place of increased wages. And I thought that was a really interesting way to look at it, right? For a while, it felt like as this debt balloon began to inflate, our lifestyles got better and we were leveraging our homes, and suddenly we felt rich and we could afford things that we hadn't been able to afford before. But it wasn't because our wages were going up. It's because there was a system of debt that was going in place that was encouraging us. I mean, if you think about the idea of, you know, 15 years ago or 10 years ago, you could get a loan with stated income. I could walk into a bank and say, yeah, I make $180,000 a year. They go, great, man, that's all. You got it. You want the loan? You got it, baby. And, you know, if they hold a mirror up to your nose and it fogged up, you got the loan, right? So you want to talk about something that I can talk about. I can talk about how there was real intent to blow up the debt in this country, so that people could print more money and get incredibly rich on this whole scheme. Now, here's how I see it going down with the mortgages. So you lend people money, you encourage them in this almost predatory kind of way. Now, this is a conspiracy theory I'm down with, that you encourage people to borrow money, and you print huge amounts of money, and you inflate and circulate tons of money into the economy. And anybody who walks in can get money, like I said. They hold a mirror up to your nose, and if it fogs up, you get the home loan. And then they take these home loans, and they carve them up Enron style, right, into these huge mortgage security blocks, which they then sell all over the world. And the reason that they sell like hotcakes is generally, mortgage-backed securities were AAA. Because why? You had real estate. You had real estate behind them. So they carved them up Enron style, the way Enron was trying to carve up energy, and they sell them to the world, to Ireland, to Greece, to Europe, everywhere, all over the country, knowing that at some point, the people that have been loaned, given money to, are not going to be able to pay back these loans. So they're waiting for that moment. And when they start to see that moment happen, what do? They turn around, these same banks, these same investment firms, they start shorting the mortgage-backed securities. And shorting means they make money. When the security loses value, they start shorting the securities on the loans that they helped to sell. And they crash the whole system. And they get rich on the way up, and they get rich on the way down. Now, that's a conspiracy theory I'm down with, because that's already happened. We already have the evidence of that, right? Let's go to TJ in Illinois. TJ, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. What's up?
Hey, how you doing? I was just wondering, speaking of giving for the holiday season, I heard not too long ago about the secret bailout that the Fed supposedly gave. I think it was something along the lines of $16 trillion or something. I think it's on Bernie Sanders' government website. I was busy, so I didn't get a
I haven't heard about this.
Look at it, but you know, I was just wondering if anybody knew about this or if it was in fact true.
I haven't heard anything about it. A secret bailout?
Yeah. On top
My
of,
God, they were bad enough when they weren't secret. A secret bailout.
I know, right? You know, so on top of the $800 billion or whatever it was. Supposedly, the Fed gave out $16 trillion in zero-interest loans to a bunch of national and foreign banks, like I think it was a Scotch bank, like one or two Swiss banks, something like that. You know, I found it on an Internet article I saw a couple of days ago, and, you know, it actually shocks me that you guys haven't heard anything about this.
I have not heard anything about it. If you can find a link, post it on the Norman Goldman Show on Facebook. So go to Facebook on the Norman Goldman Show and post it. I have not heard about a secret bailout. I don't think I would be terribly shocked or surprised, since far too much of what happens in the banking industry and in our government happens in secret. I do appreciate the call. TJ, you got something you're thankful for this Thanksgiving season?
No, yeah, I was saying, speaking of giving, $16 trillion.
Yeah, well, that's a little, and that's not something I'm grateful for, but have yourself a very happy Thanksgiving, TJ, and thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Let's go to Martin in Illinois. Martin, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. You're on with Adam Klugman. Martin, are you there? Martin, not there. Okay, so I promised you that you were going to meet a corporate person. And that's exactly what we're going to do. I don't know if you guys remember Romney. I bet you do, because you're Norman Goldman listeners. This clip from Mitt Romney.
Corporations are people, my friend. We can raise taxes on... Of course they are. Everything corporations earn ultimately goes to people. So, where do you think it goes? Whose pockets? Whose pockets? People's pockets. Okay, human beings, my friend.
Human beings, my friend. Corporate people, my friend. They're real. The corporations are people, my friend. Okay, so I wanted to actually meet one of these corporate people about, I don't know, a few months ago. So I sought out a corporate person. I'm going to replay an interview from my own show. I actually met and interviewed an actual corporate person. So you want to stick around for this. Let's roll it. We're going to roll the corporate person interview. This is from my show, Mad as Hell in America. It's madashellinamerica.com. This is an interview with an actual, honest-to-goodness, real corporate person.
Well, here at Mad as Hell in America, we talk a lot about corporate personhood and Citizens United and this whole idea that corporations can be people. And lately, they've been given the same rights as U.S. citizens. And so I started thinking, it's such a complicated issue, and there are so many sides to it. Wouldn't it be great if we could actually put a name and a face behind corporate personhood? So our next guest is someone very special, and I'm very proud to have gotten this interview. His name is Vic Stone Media. He's a limited liability company from New York, and he is an actual, honest-to-God corporate person. In addition to his corporate activities, he's the author of several works, most recently the 2011 First Quarter Shareholders Report. Vic Stone, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Adam. And, oh, by the way, my friends call me Vicky.
Okay, Vicky. Yeah. You're a corporate person. What exactly does that mean?
Just what it sounds like, Adam. I'm no different from you, a constitutionally protected citizen, just with a better portfolio.
But you're not a citizen, you're a corporation.
Well, I don't see what difference that should make. Champagne?
No, thanks. Well, my point is that a lot of people, and I consider myself one of them, feel that a person really isn't the same thing as a...
As what?
Well, it's a business. I mean, you're not really a person, biologically speaking.
I think you are being a little biocentric, Adam.
Biocentric?
Yes, biocentric, and it's quite ugly. You human beings think that just because you breathe air that you have some exclusive claim on personhood.
Well, yes, I think I do. I'm an actual person.
And so am I. I just happen to be a different kind of person. You call yourself a progressive, but maybe you're really just a reactionary. We live in a multicultural, multinational world, and the old definitions just don't apply anymore. For example, you are what I like to call a human person. I am a corporate person. I don't see why you have so much trouble with this, Adam.
Well, I guess I am prejudiced. I just don't accept that there is such a thing as a corporate person.
And yet, here I am. So maybe denial isn't just a river in Egypt, Adam.
Okay, all right. Let's just say that in some twisted semantic way, you are a person. I guess what I find offensive is that it's an insult to me, a living thing. As science defines it, to be living, a thing must, quote, be capable of growth, reproduction, and metabolism.
Let's take the first part of the question. Do I grow? Of course I do. 150 years ago, I started out as a scruffy railroad company in Santa Clara County, and now look at me. I'm all over the country. I'm overseas.
Yes, in the Cayman Islands.
Well, everyone needs a vacation now and again.
From paying taxes.
That's exactly right. Without profits, there would be no industry. Without industry, there would be no jobs. Without jobs, there would be no prosperity. And without prosperity, we're no better off than communists. You're not a communist now, are you, Adam?
Finish my question. You explained that you grow. Fair enough. What about reproduction?
I consider all my subsidiaries. I think of them as my children.
They're not children. Human beings have children. I have children. You have little companies.
Yes, and those little companies grow into big companies, just like your children.
But you didn't give birth to them.
Neither did you, Adam. But if we're talking about labor, don't get me started, because I've had labor pains for the last 100 years.
You're just being evasive.
I don't think I'm the one who's being evasive here. I think it's you who keep avoiding the issue.
And what issue is that?
That you, my liberal friend, are just another bigot. You don't like the way I define myself, so you want to change the definition to suit your purposes. Oh, you're all in favor of multiculturalism. But when it comes to multinationalism, you want to create new categories that assert your privilege. You're an anti-corporatite, Adam, of the worst kind.
An anti-corporatite? What's that?
It's someone who holds prejudicial views of corporate persons.
Well, I guess I am, then. I am an anti-corporatite.
Well, there it is. At least you can be honest about it, Adam. Because at the end of the day, you and all your liberal listeners are just a bunch of biocentric bigots who think being human makes you a part of some privileged elite class of miracles. But I am a miracle too. I am a miracle of economic ingenuity, a miracle of law, a living, growing, sentient citizen born right here in the U.S. of A. with the same desire to be free that you have. I am the new person, Adam. The corporate person, the answer to the problem of death and taxes and the moral ambiguity that make you and your kind the dinosaurs of this age. I won't let you hurt me, Adam. I won't let you use the rule of law to strip me of my economic birthright. And I will never, ever let you turn me into a second-class citizen.
What the hell? Zach, will you see who that is?
Excuse me, but we're recording a radio show.
Yeah, we know.
Wait a minute. Aren't you Justice Scalia?
Damn right he is.
Hold on, and you're...
John Roberts, in the flesh.
What's going on here?
We're here to protect an American citizen.
I'm okay. The conversation just got a little overheated.
We're not protecting you. We're protecting him.
Wait a minute. You're supposed to be defending me from him.
You really have a distorted view of America, my friend.
Are you all right, Vicky?
Just a little weak. After a few more elections, I'll be fine.
Well, you can have as many of those elections as you can buy in 2012, baby. What did you do to him, Klugman? Get up, Vicky. We're leaving.
Mr. Klugman.
Yes, Justice Roberts?
I hope that one day people like you will wake up, renounce their hatred, and accept that we are all together in this. That we are all good Americans fighting for the same cause.
You're not saying.
Oh, yes, I am.
Please don't.
Suck it to him, John.
We are all citizens united now, buddy boy.
I was afraid you were going to say that. We'll be right back.
This is Adam Klugman on the Norman Goldman Show, where fierce independence is the norm. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where fierce independence is the norm. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norm on this Thanksgiving Eve, November 23rd. It is a Wednesday, and a fine Wednesday it is here in Los Angeles. I am grateful to be here, grateful to be sitting in on Norm's show, grateful for the amazing crew that he has supporting me in keeping the Norman Goldman Show spirit alive. Thank you all for listeners. I'm grateful to you for your calls and for your posts on Facebook page, to your emails. I do really appreciate the support. I've been getting lots of support from people. So thank you. I have a lot to be grateful for. I'm going to go to Emily in San Francisco. Emily, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. You're on with Adam Klugman. Thanks for holding, Emily.
Hi, Adam. Thank you. I wanted to be grateful for you.
Oh, thank you.
For coming on this show. I've never heard you before. I think I've heard him mention your name, but I happened to take a lay lunch today, and I heard your monologue, and it was so inspiring and so refreshing to hear, because you don't hear people talking about these radical concepts like gratitude and compassion.
No.
And thinking about the other instead of yourself, and connecting with people from other parts of the world who we might not agree with in a political sense. So thank you for everything, and that sketch that you just put on was hilarious.
Good. I'm glad it gave you a chuckle. And I appreciate...
Oh, my gosh. Inspiring.
It's a dark chuckle. But I didn't do it to end it darkly, but to kind of illuminate the thinking of the people that would even create this notion of a corporate person. It's terrifying. But, you know, you said something. It's my mission to try to bring these larger concepts, to use words like love and compassion, on AM radio. So sometimes it makes people feel uncomfortable, and sometimes it makes them feel a little squeamish. But I'm cool with that, because I think that this is where we want to take the mainstream conversation in this country. We have to stop being squeamish about words like compassion, because if we're not building a compassionate society, we're building a doomed one. That's how I see it. So that's my mission, and I'm so glad you got it, Emily. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you calling in and saying something.
Absolutely. Also, we have to be the better person, like you said, and that's part of it.
Yes, that's That's right.
It's showing that we can be above the other side that wants to mudsling and be hateful, and that we can support each other and really feel common ground with other people. I've always felt really isolated in my viewpoint. I thought, oh, revolution's never going to happen. No one else has any clue what's going on. And with this movement, it's becoming clearer that people are starting to wake up. And then that just inspires you to want to do what you can to help out, because you're not alone anymore.
Right. And I think this is the whole shift. I really see the Occupy movement and all that's going on here is really kind of not just a national but a global shift in the way we do things, because it really is a matter of our survival. Emily, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Send me an email at adam@madishellinamerica.com and have yourself, because I'd love to be in touch with you, and have a great, great Thanksgiving. I'm now adding you to my list of things I'm grateful for.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
So, wow. It's always nice to get calls. She got it. I knew I'd gone out there on a limb with that monologue. I knew that it was, I was going far out to the edge. I felt myself looking down into the abyss. But sometimes we've got to take these risks to see how far is too far and how far is far enough. So our next guest is Jason Benlevy. He is the author of a book named Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech. For the past 30 years, he has been a Silicon Valley tech guru. His book is the untold story of how venture capital, media moguls, and marketeers use digital magic to distract us, invade our privacy, corrupt democracy, distort our human values, and generally sell us crap we don't need. Jason Benlevy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm grateful to be here.
I'm grateful to have you. Now, I've known you for a while. Is it Ben right. Levy or Benlevy?
Benlevy.
I had it right. I knew that. I should have trusted my instinct. So, TooMuchMagic.net is the website. Our guest is author Jason Benlevy. If you want to check it out, go check it out at TooMuchMagic.net. So tell me about your book. Well, first, give me a little bit about your background and what led you to write this book and the general thrust of it.
Sure. So I'm one of those people who was one of the science kids from the 60s who, like Steve Jobs, who was trying to merge the fact that we liked computers and that we liked the humanities, doing arts, part of that movement that brought those two things together originally. And even though I was not a technologist in terms of making the stuff, I was someone who was really good at communicating what it did. So I spent most of my time trying to tell people how the digital dream would work and show them how it would happen. But along the way, I saw that some things were not as advertised, shall we say, mainly during the 1990s when the dot-com boom happened. It kind of changed the nature of people who were involved in the technology business. And in fact, so much so that a lot of the people offering the IPOs that led to the dot-com bubble and then the boom and bust are really the same people who are behind the mortgage bust. You'll find a lot of the same characters involved. And because of the people involved in changing the nature of technology, it looks more like them than it looks like us. And by that, I mean that, you know, we have this ability to be able to connect with each other on the net, which is good. But at the same time, it's a way of peering back into us. It's a way of monitoring us. It's a way of hooking into all the things that we do in our life and grasping an understanding of us that we don't necessarily want them to have. It's everything from your car keeping track of where you're going, to your cell phone keeping track of where you're going, to the supermarket card that you use, keeping track of your habits. And all this data is collected and resold, and a lot of the point of all the stuff is really just to market stuff to us that we don't really need.
Well, and it seems that on the back of it is all this kind of monitoring. There's this great movie called How to Get Ahead in Advertising. Have you ever seen it?
I have.
It's just a wonderful movie. Listeners, if you haven't seen it, it's just tremendous. And it literally means how do you get ahead. It's about this advertising guru who grows a second head. It's really bizarre and surreal. But one of the issues that comes up in the movie that I find interesting is a line, the guy who grows the second head says, what even the genius of Orwell couldn't anticipate isn't that Big Brother would be watching us, but that we would be watching it.
Right.
And that seems to be where we're headed. We volunteer for this stuff. We volunteer to use our card to put these things, these monitoring devices in our card. We accept it on a regular basis. We come into agreement with this. So when we do that, what do we surrender?
Well, what happens is that it is so seductive and it's so beautiful, and we go and get our new iPhone and our new car that has the GPS and all of that, and most people are not aware that there's a whole invisible world in the digital life that connects all this stuff together.
So like the Safeway card. Give me an example.
Safeway card is perfect. You're going in there, you're saving a few cents on something. In return, you're giving them a lifelong profile of everything you buy. And that allows them to go and sell that data off to someone else. That data can be cross-checked against who you talk to on the phone. If you're going and checking in to try and be the mayor of a restaurant, they know that you've been there. And some of that is just for marketing, but some of it gets more sinister to the point that when 9/11 happened, that the government really didn't have that much information. They actually went to a private data aggregator to figure out who the hijackers were.
Our guest is Jason Benlevy. Too Much Magic is his book. Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech. TooMuchMagic.net is the website. Okay, so in your book, yes, there is this... This seems fairly innocuous, that we sign off on the Safeway card. I don't really care if anybody knows what kind of, rice dream I buy or potato chips I prefer. But there's really a direct line to be drawn between the Safeway card and the Diebold machine. So make that connection for us.
Absolutely. So when we get to the idea of digital democracy, and let's connect the social part of all this, because probably the biggest privacy invasion we have right now, we are handing ourselves over to, which is social networking, which on the surface we really like. We like the idea that we can connect with our friends, and it's an easy way of doing it, and sharing information. So that's great. The problem is that when we talk about Facebook, we are not the customers, we are the product. That is, all this information is being collected about us and sold off to other people. And we don't know eventually where all these conversations we've had that can be political or personal, where all this information winds up. So say that Facebook doesn't exist in 5 years or 10 years, and all this data has been aggregated, where does it go? Who owns it? It isn't us. We have no control over it. Even all the pictures that we've taken that may have been compromising, even if we're 14 or 15 years old and we take some pictures that we don't really want existing online for the next 35 years, well, they're still there. And if we think it doesn't matter, even just think about the McCarthy era and how they dug around through archives to find out who was a member of the Communist Party and kept people from being able to get jobs. So the persistence of information in the electronic world is pretty dangerous.
Jason Benlevy, Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech, once a tech guru helping the tech world sell us all these gadgets, now someone who is calling for a kind of an end to it. So where I was going was this idea that when we agree with the Safeway card, what we do is say, well, we can't then not agree with the Diebold machine, because what happens is there's this kind of trance that we fall into when we sign off in a very general way on technology. And this seems to be a point in your book, this mystification that has taken place. We just say, wow, that's really cool. Okay, that's really, I've saved a few dollars. Wow, I can get on the internet. Wow, there's all these benefits, but we're really not having a national conversation about the costs.
No, we're really not. And it's kind of like we look at two sides of it at the same time. We like the idea that we were able to, in the 2004, 2006, and 2008 elections, that we were able to raise money for candidates over the net, which was a great idea. But for all the effort that we put in to go and raise money for candidates, you know, $20 at a time, someone else was in control of the voting machines. And they were able to go and manipulate the results, if they wished to do so, by remote control. So for all the public effort that we made, we can wind up pretty much with nothing. And we do know, in fact, that the 2004 election in Ohio was deeply manipulated electronically.
So there has to be something we can do about it. Our guest is Jason Ben-Levy. Too Much Magic. TooMuchMagic.net is the website. Too Much Magic is the book. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, you've got something up on Common Dreams I want to talk a little bit about. There is a solution to this problem of mystification with technology, and we're going to discuss that with Jason Ben-Levy when we come back. You're listening to the Norm and Goldman Show, where fierce independence is the norm. I'm Adam Klugman, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show, the place where justice is served. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman on this Thanksgiving Eve, Wednesday, November 23rd. I am loving being here. I want to say thank you to all the Norm listeners who have been so supportive. Thank you to Norm's amazing team of people. You guys rock. I am having a blast. We're closing out here with Jason Ben-Levy. Jason Ben-Levy is the author of a book, Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech. He was once one of the gurus who helped sell the tech movement. Now he wants to unsell it. He also has a blog on Common Dreams called A Generation Moves from Preoccupied to Occupy. Jason Ben-Levy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So take us through this. One of the, it seems to me, your primary arguments is that we need, that when we're doing tech stuff, we're not actually doing anything. And what is it about the Occupy movement that encourages you in this context?
Okay. Well, one of the reasons I was writing the book is I was really concerned about people who are millennial generation, who have grown up as with technology surrounding them their entire lives. That is from their cell phone to their computer, and started what I saw a trend of being able to, that they were distantiated from doing things in the real world. So if they were dating, they were doing it by screen rather than having the random meeting of each other. And so a lot of experiences that we had usually done as a human being that were in real space had started moving over to virtual space. And when it came to politics, it sure looked good in 2008 that people were doing that. But then when it went up against people who were the Tea Partiers, who actually physically got up in the face of politicians and confronted them and got out into the streets, we saw that the political power in 2010 shifted dramatically, which was followed up by people showing up in the flesh in Wisconsin after that state went Tea Party, and the progressives really came back in a big way by showing up. And so I think that there was an inspiration to move away just from thinking that we're doing something by existing in the social media realm to getting out and actually doing something physically in the real world. And I think that even the word occupy really tells you a lot. It's about being in that physical space and not going away.
Our guest is Jason Ben-Levy, author of the book Too Much Magic. TooMuchMagic.net is the website. Go to Common Dreams. He has an absolutely sensational blog called A Generation Moves from Preoccupied to Occupy, Power of Physical Presence in a Digital World. I just love your blog over at Common Dreams, Jason, because it really embodies the necessity. It really creates the imperative for why we need to show up and how important it is that we show up and that we use digital tools, not in place of showing up, but to help us show up. So I think that
right.
That just represents, it's a tremendous writing effort. Jason is also a terrific writer. His book is extremely well written, which is often not the case when you have people who aren't writers trying to write books about tech. So your book is also eminently readable. So thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Sure. So we have to remember that when we have all these technology tools as our communications, that they're extremely vulnerable to, if we think there's a 1% involved in finance, there's even less than that involved in controlling telecommunications in this country. So we know that in the Iranian Revolution, that it was all the social media and cell phones that became what the government used to track down the dissidents and jail them. We also know that it at least at one point in the Egyptian Revolution, that there basically was a master switch that the government was trying to do to shut down communications. So even though we go and develop all these technologies, or we have these technologies around us, we can't depend on them. And a wonderful example is what happened in Zuccotti Park, where people were not allowed to use microphones So they came up with this idea called the human microphone, which is having one person speak and having the people around them basically say what they're just saying, a phrase at a time, but repeat it. And even without having a PA system, it's an enormous impact that it makes. And we're starting to see this happening not just at Zuccotti Park, but at various political gatherings. So it even happened to Barack Obama yesterday.
Right, I saw that.
Right, and it's really startling to see these voices being heard for the first time. When we're on blogs, you know, people can just turn it off. Politicians don't have to look at it. We know that they completely ignore email coming at them, and they just filter it out. They pay more attention to phone calls and letters because it gets in their way. And having physical bodies show up really gets in their way.
That's right. Well, we are coming to the end of the show. Our guest has been Jason Ben-Levy, Too Much Magic, pulling the plug on the cult of tech, TooMuchMagic.net. I love what you had to say about the human microphone. There's something really tribal, something really elemental, something that if you pulled the plug on just about everything, it would work. So, Jason,
right.
Thank you very much. I'm going to sign off here. I just want to wish all of Norm's listeners a really wonderful, safe, healthy, beautiful Thanksgiving. I am truly grateful to be here with you all, with Norm's amazing team. Thank you all so much. This is Adam Glugman. I'll be back on Friday on the Norm and Goldman Show, where justice is served.